Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this midweek edition of the podcast. We are downloaded in over 30 countries across the globe and available on every major media platform. For everyone listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show if you have not already. Nothing you do will help us more immensely. Just a quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners. This is not a Homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When the Red Sox are getting utterly destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. The Red Sox just wrapped up a 2-game set against the New York Mets, sweeping both games 2-0. The Red Sox are in first place atop the AL East, currently 3 games ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays. News out of Fenway, the ballpark will increase its capacity to 25% as of May 11th. All else is quiet as the Red Sox fly to Arlington, Texas to begin a 4-game set against the Texas Rangers. News from around the league, Blue Jays starter Hyunjin Ryu was placed on the 10-day IL due to a glute strain. If you're unfamiliar with a glute, it's an ass muscle. Astros slugger Yordan Alvarez has been placed on the IL. No reason was given, but it is suspected to be COVID-related. The Atlanta Braves will become the first MLB team to increase to full capacity on May 7th. Truist Park holds 41,084 people. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter, at CushmanMLB. Co-hosting with me tonight from the mile-high city of Denver by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. Andrew, how are you?
What's going on? Sweep City over here. What a great 2 games.
Yeah, we all predicted a sweep on the last show, but it was for the Mets, so.
Maybe we should do the same for the next one.
Yeah, next time somebody throws six walks, I'm putting money on them the next game, because who knew? Job knew. He bet on the game. And speaking of Job,
I did indeed.
Yeah, coming to us from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island. Andrew, I'm terrible. I've botched it every time. What's your Twitter handle? Where can they harass you?
You can find me at Andrew Dwan MLB. That's Dwan.
Very good. Job, your Twitter handle.
You can find me at Job MLB, J-O-B MLB, no job application.
That's awesome. I think after Hot Take Tuesdays, I said that's on the YouTube channel for those of you who haven't found us on YouTube. And I watched Job's episode and was like, good job, Job. Same spelling. But
I get that too often.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I get called all kinds of stuff, colorful stuff that we don't say on podcasts. But, yeah, so kind of a fun Met series. I'm just going to say it was a little bit disappointing because the Red Sox have a big offense and the polar bear was kind of, you know, tranquilized and not a factor. Lindor still hasn't gotten it together yet. So it could have been an explosive series, but it was all about the pitchers.
Yeah, Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja on Twitter, definitely got his money's worth off this last two games. It was absolutely ridiculous. Some of these pitches that we saw were just insane. I thought the Red Sox might have been able to put up a couple more runs in the first game against Peterson because, I don't know, he's just kind of just a meh, nothing pitcher. But they got enough. They just scored literally the bare minimum of what they needed, and that's all it took.
Absolutely.
Nothing better than a win when you don't expect one. That happened in both games in this series. This series was dominated by the Red Sox pitching staff. I would say stop me if you heard that one before, but you haven't heard that on the show yet. It's been interesting. I feel like Andrew and I are getting all the luck, Terry. You should spend more time with us. Because every show we do, we have a positive spin. Every show you do with the other two, Jason and Charlie are like ready to jump off a bridge. So this is really just, I'm loving this season so far.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a lot more negative than the audience thinks, you know, behind the scenes. But I come on here and just kind of, you know, try to play it cool. And I've already said, you know, I haven't ordered my first glass of punch yet, although I am drinking Tropical Punch Body Armor right here. You know, as far as the Red Sox making the playoffs, but I'm looking at the menu. I'm looking at the punch menu. So, you know, we'll get there. We'll probably get there. But getting into it, studs and duds, only a two-game series. We struggled to come up with the duds, so that's going to be entertaining. But there were some studs for sure in this series. Job, you're going to lead off this episode. Who was your stud for the series?
My stud for the series was decided after game one, and people who are hearing this are going to think I'm crazy. They're going to think, oh, well, okay, it happened in game two. My stud's Christian Vasquez. He struck out three times in game one, but called probably his best game of the year. And it helps that Gary Richards had some nasty stuff, especially on his curveball. But he was able to get Gary Richards through seven innings of no damage and maneuvered him out of some tricky situations there where he gave up a double down the line that he should not have given up, but for the shift and then a walk to follow. So he had two guys on with two outs, and Vasquez dialed up a crazy situation there to get him out of that inning with some good curveballs, some high heat, which I loved. And then he came back today with the biggest hit of the series in the double off of Jacob DeGrom with Xander Bogaerts on second base to drive in a run. It ended up being the only run and the difference in that game. So he's my stud for the series without question.
Yeah, he did a great job pitch framing. He also did have a big throw out of old friend Kevin Pillar at second base. I forget what inning it was, but it was definitely mid to later
the sixth
yesterday. Was it? Okay, cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It ended the sixth. So that was great. The bat definitely isn't what it was to the beginning of the season, but I mean, there's ebbs and flows to every season. So Vasquez will come around. He's doing what you need him to do, and that's calling a good game and playing great defense behind the plate. And props to catching the umpire tonight. So that's that was another assist by him. That was a little scary for anyone that saw that one. Yeah, I think it's a very fair pick to pick Vasquez, despite the lowish offensive numbers.
Well,
I'm in that camp like Terry is. I want my catcher to be a defensive catcher. And any offense you get is gravy. Vasquez has shown he can be a top five offensive catcher. Last night was the first time I've seen him be a top defensive catcher for the Red Sox this season, and that's all I really want in my catcher position. Terry, your thoughts?
Yeah. I just want to say really quick. Yeah, and you saw Vasquez did exactly what they needed to for him to do tonight, and he choked up on that RBI. We don't need him to be hitting home runs. We really don't. If he just wants to hit 265, that's awesome to me, as long as he's calling a great game and playing good defense.
I mean, he is in a bit of a slump, but I think he will bounce back. I wouldn't put Vasquez like Devers level clutch in terms of you know, big hits and big moments, you know, not quite with the frequency, but he's definitely a guy who can handle it. And he did today. DeGrom gave up three doubles early. So Vasquez was one of them. Bogarts was one of them. And Devers himself doubled on a ball down the right field line. So they got their hits early. That run came in the second inning and it was all they needed. It was a one-run game.
Well, it was all we were going to get. You know, you get the feeling watching that game, watching any DeGrom, right? But especially that game. You got a Xander on second with nobody out. If that run doesn't come home and you don't get at least one there, the pendulum for momentum swings in a totally opposite direction, and you probably lose that game. I know the game ended 1-0, so it's easy to say that. But even if this game ended 3-1 or 2-0, 4-0, whatever, I would still say that would be a key play, because getting the first run off the ground is no easy task.
No, one run is one more than expected runs against Jacob DeGrom at this point of his career. So whenever you can get it, I don't care if it's pretty or ugly, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, and I mean, they pulled him a little earlier than I thought they would. I think, Terry, to you off air, I said I thought he was going to go through seven after coming off of a complete game. He would be a little bit tired. I don't think you saw him, you know, tired or sloppy by any means, but he left a couple of pitches up there in the zone. The Red Sox went and got him, especially, you know, that double by Vasquez was up around the letters. You know, he wanted that up around the eyes where he put it with Dahlbeck for the strikeout. He left it a little bit lower than he wanted, and Vasquez went up and got it. So it was nice to see the Red Sox capitalize on, you know, what for anyone else is a perfect pitch, for DeGrom was a little bit of a mistake.
Yeah, and it was one of those games you just it didn't go the way we thought it was going to go. You know what I mean? And all the action was early, and we're going to get into some of the reasons why it was also a low-scoring game on their part. But to hold that offense to just one run over 18 innings – that's impressive. That's impressive. So let's kind of get into that. Andrew, who is your stud for the series?
This wasn't even a question for me. It is my boy, Garrett Richards. I've been waiting all season to say that. And, you know, the numbers weren't pretty for him going into the start. But after, he's lit up two runs or less in three of his last four outings, which is majorly impressive, because it's not like he's going up against like slapdick teams. He's facing good competition. And yesterday, it was the best of the best. It was a different pitcher. He shortened his delivery. His release point was, I mean, it was precise every time. It was unbelievable. It was day and night. Whatever they did between starts, I don't know how much film they watched. I don't know how much Dave Bush worked with them. I don't know how much they can work with the players in between games with whatever protocols they have going on. But a switch was flipped, and he looked comfortable out there. I was proud of him. You go seven innings and you strike out 10 guys and you don't walk a single batter. That's unbelievable. Red Sox stats on Twitter, shout out him. He had a great stat. It was players for the Red Sox, starting pitchers, that went that had 10 Ks with zero walks since 02. And he added Richards to the list, and guys like Beckett and Lester, they only had one, two, and they've been a lot. They pitch a lot more games than Garrett has. So if this is what we're going to get from now on, your number four starter might be a number two in a good rotation. And this is just a major development. And more power to him going on in that seventh inning, because they showed him in the dugout after the sixth. He thought he was done. I wasn't happy they sent him out for the seventh. You know, you get the guy takes his foot off the gas and starts joking around with teammates. I mean, these guys don't talk to their teammates in between innings, let alone like laugh and joke around. And he came back out, gone through that, and then was able to be lifted for a pinch hitter in the bottom half. And it just, you know, turned the lineup over, which they really needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I didn't think we were going to see this from Garrett Richards once this season. I thought he was going to be my perennial dud. And to quote Charlie from the last show, I think Charlie said, Garrett Richards is my dud forever. Well, you know, I was on that bandwagon until this week. Garrett Richards really showed me, frankly, some balls I didn't think he had. It reminded me a lot of something Curt Schilling said after the 2004 ALCS, which is, I could think of nothing that would make me happier than going out there and making 60,000 people from New York shut up. Well, that's, he made 60,000 Boston fans shut up. There was a lot of fans who doubted the signing, me, myself included, and I won't say anything negative about him for at least 5 days. He earned himself some respite, but I'm not by any means as excited about it as Andrew is, because we'll see what he can do for a couple starts in a row. But his release point was on, you know, was on tonight, and that's huge for him. We saw that be super erratic in his first three starts. Even in the start where he didn't give up too many runs, he was erratic with where he was releasing the ball. And if he can get that kind of chemistry with Vasquez and they can deal like that, the Red Sox are going deep.
I'm not going to let my guard down here. It was nice to see, and it was a big series. And he pitched the best start he's had in a Red Sox uniform so far.
The best start he's had so far, period. Red Sox uniform or otherwise.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. And then on the other hand, he was catching the Mets at the right time. That's a team not firing on all cylinders. Francisco Lindor has had probably the worst start to a season of any career he's had. I don't know what Pete Alonso's deal is right now, but he was a complete non-factor all series long. So, I mean, if he rattles off a few more of these, then yeah, I'll kind of let my guard down and I'll let the confidence go up. But he did have more walks than strikeouts coming into this series. And I mean, if he's going to be losing his mechanics that badly the third week of the season after spring training or whatever, how quickly can he lose it again? So, you know, so we'll see how it goes, I guess. He will.
Well, for me,
go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the thing with me with Richards is that it has been mechanical. We haven't seen him get hit around at all. So that's why I've really never given up hope on it. It's just like, how many side sessions can they get to work this out? Now, do I expect them to go out and fire seven innings, 10 Ks again with no walks next game? Absolutely not. I mean, that would be number one pitcher stuff, and they're not paying him that way. He doesn't have that clout, quite frankly. But he's shown just the raw stuff he has. He's been great, and he brought it all together for one start. So it's just super encouraging to see him put it all together and give us just a taste of what can be there if it all starts to click. And that's what the signing was. It was, if it all clicks, this is going to be great. If it, you know, you get 60% of what you think you could be, whatever, it's 10 mil and you're still serviceable. And I think he's definitely, I think the floor for him is a number three at this point.
Well, I think the floor for him is a AAA starter. You know, that's my floor for him. I don't, but based on Terry's face, he probably agrees with me. But
I want Andrew to be right, but
me too, no doubt. I'd be the happiest person in the nation's capital just for that reason. I'd be the happiest person in this on the whole East Coast. But I just don't see his floor as a three, because we've seen his floor in the last 3 weeks be a borderline major league pitcher. So for me, it's kind of stressful. You know, my heart rate is not going down every time he pitches until he strings four or five of these together. And I don't know if he can do that.
Well, I mean, if you look at his outings, he's had two bad outings, and the other ones, he let up two earned runs, zero earned runs, and then yesterday he let up one earned run. And that's honestly not too bad. And he's sitting here with a 4.94 ERA, which is, you know, if he throws three scoreless, if he goes out and does that against the Rangers, that's going to be down into the low fours. And that's kind of what we expected when we signed him. No one expected like a 3-4 ERA out of this guy. We expected the reverse. It's 4-3 or something. And I think we all would have been happy about that.
He just has to hold. I just don't like the tightrope. You know, I feel like I'm walking a tightrope every time I watch one of his starts. And
but how many
this time he made it across?
How many number three or four starters in Major League Baseball are giving you guaranteed greatness each time they go out? Those kinds of starters are lottery tickets. They're scratchers. Just
but see,
like,
you say guaranteed
the league.
Greatness. I don't want guaranteed greatness. I want a Martin Perez.
I mean, he's better than.
Give me five innings.
We don't know what Perez is going to do game in and game out if you look at his stats.
Well, Perez and.
This year he's been off a little bit, but Perry, your thoughts.
Perez and Evaldi are 3-4 guys at best, and I'm not nearly as stressed out watching them as I am at times with Richards. And there's a lot of unknown still, because he played most, if not all of his career, in lovey-dovey Anaheim, where they pack that stadium even though they lose and never make the playoffs. And one of the lower-pressure teams to play for, that's where he comes from. What's he going to be like at Fenway Park in a very hostile environment when he draws the unlucky straw of having to pitch against Garrett Cole? And
he knows that he's going to be booed if he screws up. You know, the pressure.
See, well, that's on Boston fans. Yeah, but I mean, Jesus, at some point we just got to realize you're paying this guy $10 million, which is nothing in the year 2021. If you want a guy that's going to be three times better than him, you're going to have to pay him $30 million. He's a number three or number four.
Andrew, like, you're starting to sound like Chaim Bloom, my friend.
It's not a good.
I wish I was.
It's not a good environment for it to be a head case, though. And not so much by media personalities, but just around on social media. I've heard more than a few David Price comparisons as far as his personality goes. So hopefully he's more likable than David Price, but we'll get into the Texas series, but that's a good matchup for him. If he pitched well against the Mets, there's no reason he shouldn't pitch well against Texas. And, you know, it'll be another.
Yeah, see, I'm like you, Terry. I'm not expecting him to go out and shut down the Yankees for 7 minutes at any point. I'm expecting him to give you 5 innings of 3 to 4 runs against the Yankees. But against teams like Texas or against teams like the West, the way that they played this weekend, I'm expecting something similar to what you got. Now, not 7, but 5 innings of 1 run, no run ball is something that you should expect from any big league starter when he's facing a lineup full of scrubs. And that's what Texas has. So hopefully we see that from Garrett Richards again.
I think he'll be fine that game. But and if he's not fine, then we're going to. A different crew is going to do that show,
really,
but
gonna start.
Yeah,
you know, the seesaw is really going to start. But the way that I look at it is the happiest person in the entire city of Boston after this series is Chaim Bloom, right? Because we'll talk about it when we get to the duds, but none of the Chaim Bloom guys that he's brought in here have been the big cogs in the machine so far. None of them have stepped up and won us games compared to the guys that were already here. I see Andrew's face.
The bullpen.
Well, pitch today?
Yeah. The bullpen's been good. The bullpen's been good.
And so is the starter. It,
right? Whitlock is a high employment guy, but.
Yep.
Sawamura has been good.
Guy. It's a very low leverage. If he doesn't work out, move. No big deal. The high pressure guy is Ricketts. Now, his French Cordero so far hasn't worked out. Renfro hasn't worked out. They've both been duds multiple times, have yet to earn a stud on the show so far, right? Whereas Richards is, that's his big ticket item for the offseason. His job was to go out and put together a ball club that could win. He got a bunch of guys who were role players, and Garrett Richards was his big sign. So he needs Garrett Richards to succeed in order to get some credit, I would say, from the fan base, because otherwise Alex Cora is going to reap all the reward.
Well,
of fans.
Our fan base isn't exactly the most rational when it comes to High and Bloom, even though today you had Nick Pivetta go out, throw a one-hit ball, and then you had a High and Bloom guy relieve him, and then a High and Bloom guy relieve him, and they let up nothing. And yesterday, more of the same. Like, he's honestly... who is he signed that's been like bad? If you look at Renfro, he's making $3 million and he's a utility guy that's going to be splitting time with Jared Duran in 2 months. They're having three more prospects come up with Franchi, who's, yeah, he's been scuffling badly. But you put him in AAA. It's not like Benintendi's hitting the cover off the ball. Honestly, throw last year out because they had a negative budget and they literally had literally less than $0 to work with. I mean, Verdugo has been a stud. When he's, I would say he's been a main cog of the High and Bloom machine.
He's been good.
As far as guys that he brought in for this series, right? Or for this season, rather. This series is the first time you've seen a High and Bloom team win a series that they probably should not have won, where it wasn't JD Martinez, Rafael Devers, and Xander Bogart doing all the work. Guys that were already here. I just think that this is a big series for High and Bloom as far as the team.
I think the season's been, you got to give him some credit for the season. You got Nick Pivetta too, who's pitched lights out. He almost had a no hitter last game.
Almost a no hitter in the sixth. I like that. Now we're getting to Mad Bump levels. Almost no hitters. All right.
Let me say this. Just my piece on Bloom. He's done a fantastic job with the bullpen. I give him a lot of credit there. Whitlock, like we've pointed out, since all through spring training, been solid. Still hasn't given up a run yet. Sawamura, the more I see that splitter, the more I want to see him more in high leverage. I think he's going to take someone's job away. So good job there.
He's an absolute stud with that splitter. It's one of the most dominant
nasty
pitches I've ever seen.
Nasty, yeah. And I'm going to give him an incomplete for right now because of all the thoughts I just had on Richards. Pivetta's trending the right way. He's really only looked great in his last two starts. But the trajectory seems to be going up. I'm going to give him an incomplete for now. But
let's not forget about Andrees, too.
Well, he's in the bullpen. But, yeah, good signing. No issues at all with the bullpen whatsoever. And then with the lineup, it's a little underwhelming. And this little run we're on, it's not a streak by any means, but in five of our last seven games, one, two, three, four of those have been wins. But we've scored three or less runs in five out of our last seven. So we're kind of getting away with it. Our pitching is bailing out that offense. I'm not thrilled with the lineup. I'm not thrilled with Kike Hernandez leading off. Every time I watch that guy, he's behind in the count. It's 0-1, 0-2, and then he's got to grind his way back in. It's frustrating. That's a bottom third of the order guy. And
yeah, I'm with you on Kike. I don't like him in the leadoffs. I would love to see Verdugo in there. And even if you don't want to drop, if the team doesn't want to drop Kike too far, I think he'd be a two hitter because he does make contact.
I don't like him in that top. But at the same time, we've got nobody. But that's still on Bloom, I would say. We don't have another guy to slot up there. And then the bottom third of the order is absolutely painful, especially if Renfro and Cordero are in the lineup together. And then you got Dahlbeck in there somewhere. It's just,
the bottom third of the order is like watching a National League team.
It's
almost like there's an automatic out.
Or a couple. So that's where I'm a little frustrated with Bloom right now. But before I move on to my stud, you mentioned something in there, Andrew. You expect now that Duran will be called up? Because that wasn't the expectation.
Yeah, I think he'll be up in June-ish or July. I don't think the plan was ever for Renfro and these guys to be full-time 162-game players. I thought Renfro was going to produce more than he did, for sure. I thought maybe 120 games worth. But yeah, they had Duran in left field the other day over at the alt site that was broadcasted. So they have him working around there, and I could see him coming up. You also have Danny Santana, who they extended his player opt-out by a month, and he's about to start ramping it up. And that's another one of those guys that can play three or four different positions. So the shuffle continues. They can definitely bring some people up here, send people down. I mean, Franchi's got options, and he needs consistent playing time. This isn't all on him. He definitely needs these at-bats, and just, you know, he's just not getting them.
Well, he's only had 194 at-bats in his big league career because he's not a guy that is a perennial – you know, player in the big leagues as the starter who's now being asked to platoon. He's a guy who's still learning to play in the big leagues. Now, he came up as a shortstop. He was so bad at shortstop, they moved him to the outfield. And now he's not playing good outfield. Now, I know in the last series it was already talked about, you know, that catch that should have been made to save Pavetta's no-hitter, so I don't want to hash it out too much. But that's actually on Chaim Bloom. Alex Cora came out and said that's exactly where they wanted him. And the reasoning there, they gave out the reasoning, was because that was the exact average distance that the guy who was up, I can't even remember who it was, hits the ball in the air, 252 feet, whatever it happens to be. It's almost like there's some disconnect between the front office and the actual baseball decision being made. And I wish Alex Cora would take that by the reins a little bit more, in which, you know, by which I mean, if Alex Cora doesn't think Franchi Cordero is ready to play, then he should have the ability to sit him down and just, I'll play Renfro, and, you know, so be it. But Santana, I think, is probably the next man up to take a chance and get some at-bats because of that opt-out clause. And let's not forget, he hit 265 with 28 home runs the last time he was fully healthy. So he's going to be a big piece here, I think, down the stretch.
Yeah, and the timeline works good, too, because you don't want Franchi to be getting at bats at the alt site only, you know, facing the same two freaking pitchers over and over and over again.
Oh, sure. And it's Groundhog Day. The start of the season, right?
Exactly. So
it times perfectly.
Yeah, so he'll be facing different guys. Granted, they aren't going to have long series. They're going to be six-game series this year in the minors. But he's going to see a lot different arm angles, different slots that are coming in. It can only benefit him at this point.
I'm not that familiar with Santana. I know he's just kind of a fringe guy, but if they think Duran is close, I want Duran because that's your top of the order guy. He's got that type of a makeup. Now, can he handle the pressure? Can you just?
I don't want Duran. I don't.
I
want him to play when he's ready. I don't want the last thing I want them to do is rush him up and have him have some, you know, early success, and then when, you know, he gets figured out a little bit, not make that next week and end up in a Michael Chavis cycle. I'd rather them just take their time with him, and when he's ready to really hit big league pitching, put him in and let him succeed.
Dahlbeck's
I mean, he was hitting 280 just like 3 games ago. They had a bad stretch, but they're going to give Duran at least a month of minor league games and see where it goes from there. And if he's not producing above and beyond the competition, then they probably won't bring him up.
So, Andrew, I don't know enough about our minor league system, to be honest, to predict this. But am I right in thinking that if Duran comes to Fenway, he immediately slots in at center field and Verdugo moves to right? Is that kind of the right way to look at it?
Well, in Fenway, probably. I mean, he's not a great defender. So honestly, even if you wanted to stick him in left, it'd probably be the best option. Keep Renfroe in right, where he's actually been great. Renfroe's been he's been awesome in the field so far this year. And I would put Verdugo in center. And then obviously, depending on the road. But yeah, it's going to all depend on how quickly and how hard advanced Duran's become since the Puerto Rico League, where he had some highlight catches, but there were also some ones where he didn't get great breaks on the ball.
I mean, if Santana's going to come up and I don't have to watch Cordero, then that's fine. I obviously do prefer Duran. I think it would be good for the fan base. If it works out, it makes Heim Bloom look good as well for calling him up. But, you know, Cordero is a bad baseball player to me, offensively and defensively. Just doesn't get a good read on the ball. Seems to be completely lost out there in left field. So if it ends up being Santana, so be it. But we can't have two out of the three guys, and sometimes all three of those guys in the bottom third of the order being an automatic out. So I'd like to see that addressed. And if you do, like, just for argument's sake, say Duran is the guy, and he comes up and he plays at the top of the order, I think Kike at that point makes your bottom of the order. If you put him in the seventh hole, suddenly you look all right. So I think the pieces just fit. So my stud, we freestyled the hell out of Garrett Richards there and went a million different directions because my stud for the series was tonight's pitcher, Nick Pivetta, who went five innings, not quite as impressive as Richards, but he only gave up one hit and walked his normal three. He typically seems to walk at least two or three, and struck out seven. So it was the second stellar start in a row. He had the no-hitter going into the sixth inning of the last start. And it's nice to see. Again, it's the Mets, but you still got to look good against the Mets, you know, if you're gonna make a case in the future. So it's good to see. And I guess my question for you guys is, if Hauk comes up, whose job are you taking? Like, who do you trust the most? Let's just put it that way. Forget Hauk. Who do you trust the most? Who's going to have the better season from here out?
Well, I think Nick Pivetta's kind of earned a much longer leash than Garrett Richards has to this point, and that's no fault of it. That's no fault of Garrett Richards, to be honest. I think Nick Pivetta has outperformed expectations set for him, let alone, you know, the rest of the rotation. So to me, that, you know, that Garrett Whitlock, Nick Pivetta combination that we seem to be running with every couple of games, that's starting to look like a really good combination if you can get some offense. You really only need four or five runs. And then it looks like that one is, you know, put it in the books because that combo has been dominant. So I think Nick Pivetta definitely has the longer leash.
Yeah, I think I would take it from a different angle. I don't see, bring Hauk up, but I don't see either guy losing their job per se. I can see you piggybacking Whitlock and Hauk with a signed starter. So you got your Garrett to Garrett games, and then you have like your Pivetta to Hauk games. I really could see them going totally outside the box and doing something like that. Give me, you know, if you're like, all right, you know, he got through four, he's laboring, but he hasn't given up any runs, but he's at 82 pitches. Bring in, you know, pitcher X. Give me three innings. And that's, you pretty much are creating a seven or eight inning starter. I just have this inkling that that's the route they're going to go. Because you could just send down a Austin Bryce. You know, one would notice.
So now you're looking at like a Tampa Bay style pitching staff, except
it's like having an, yeah, exactly. It's like having an opener, but an opener that can give you five innings easy. Like, I loved what they were doing today, bringing in Whitlock for you know, two or three, and then you get to your setup and then your closer. That's a clean ball game right there. Especially if we're going to carry 26 guys on a roster as opposed to the old fashioned 25, which, you know, take advantage of these rules as they come.
You know, I do like that. I think the one thing they've pretty much said is they're not moving Tanner Houck out of the rotation. That's the only reason he's not up. I mean, I think we pretty much all agree on that, that he is in the top, you know, nine arms that we would have available. It just came down to pure talent to get three outs, but they want him to get more than three outs every time. So to me, it's interesting kind of how they would do that without ruining him or moving him out of that spot. But whose spot does Tanner Houck take? I think Andrew probably came up with a solution that would occur to Chaim Bloom. Is Austin Bryce hasn't done anything. I mean, honestly, if Taylor wasn't the only lefty in the bullpen besides Hernandez, I would send Taylor down. But there's an abundance of arms out there that are the C-minus guy. So I think there's room out there if you're willing to put him in the bullpen.
Brazier is going to be facing live pitching here pretty quick, apparently. So, you know, don't take him off your radar. About Whitlock, though, he was pretty good tonight. You know, struck out four out of the four out of his six outs were strikeouts. But he's starting to labor a little bit. So I don't know if teams are starting to, you know, get some looks on him and whatnot.
You know, I think, Terry, he's putting a lot more pressure on himself than he was originally, and that's part of it. And the other part is I think teams are really starting to focus in on Garrett Whitlock as a guy that you know you're going to face if you have a series against Pivetta and Richmond. I guarantee the Mets hitters looked at two, maybe three at-bats that Whitlock has had this season, or two or three guys that he's faced this season, because they knew that either Richard or Pivetta was probably going to labor a little bit, and Whitlock was going to be the first guy out of the pen, the same way you do, the same way I do, and the same way Andrew does. So I wouldn't be surprised if teams are kind of game planning to face Whitlock one time through the order, the way that they would game plan to face a starter. It wouldn't surprise me at all. But I don't know if labor is the right word. Sure, he's gotten himself into a little bit of trouble, but he's gotten out of it with no runs. And that he set the bar so high in his first month, we're not going to see no runs from him for the whole season. You know, he's a Rule 5 guy with a great story, sure. But his ERA at zero is not going to happen. So even if he does labor a little bit, it's still better than expected. I'm not worried about Whitlock at all.
All right, Andrew's thoughts on it.
I mean, I've been pretty consistent with Whitlock or my views on him. I don't want them to use and abuse him. That's why I would like to see him go every 5 days, being piggybacked to one of these, you know, back-end starters you have. It's a weird situation. You got a guy coming off TJ who is also a Rule 5 guy. So it's not like you're like, all right, you hit your 85 innings that we wanted you to hit. That's a milestone. We'll send you down to the minors and you can get your work in. I mean, no, you lose him. You literally lose him back to the Yankees if you – so teams are getting to start catching up. It's film. It's, you know, that's the world we live in. Living these days. So protect them, throw them once every 5 days, and don't overwork them, and just treat them with kid gloves, honestly.
Yeah, and I'm not pessimistic on him, but I just think that that first run that's going to be charged against him just kind of feels like it's starting to become more imminent. Had a hit and a walk today, and was definitely grinding a lot more than normal. Another situation I kind of wanted to take your temperature on, and tonight's performance kind of makes it less relevant because I kind of put it on the docket last night, but Matt Barnes, game one, did you want him to pitch the ninth or did you want Andres to stay in? I wanted Andres to stay in.
I'm the exact opposite. I wanted Barnes last night. I wanted Matt Andrews tonight. I don't know. Last night just seemed like the night to bring in Barnes to me. that 2-1 game, that low scoring game. Obviously, we didn't know it was going to be pretty much the same thing today. I don't know. It just felt like a night to let him come in and just shut them down, which luckily he did. He got him back on track because he was, you know, slipping just a little bit, nothing too major. But yeah, they got him back on schedule, and we are going to need to, tone it down a little bit. Like, he's treating, Cora's treating Matt Barnes like, who was it? Girardi used to treat Scott Proctor. He'd be like at the All-Star break, and he was already in like 88 games that year. You're like, hey, he's going to die. Let's chill out here. So let's, we got to save some bullets for Matty Barnes here coming up.
Well, you know, I was thinking the same thing or along those lines, but then I remembered that our next 7 to 10 games, we've got the Orioles for four, or rather the Orioles for three, the Rangers for four, and we project to hit all of those starting pitchers. You know, if we expect the offense to be scoring runs, I don't expect any of those games to be save situations if things go according to plan. Now, they never do. There's going to be one, maybe two save situations in that 7-game stretch. And then we've got Detroit coming up as well, which is another soft landing spot. So some of those bullet-saving moves is probably because he won't get any work in for the next 4 days if things go according to plan.
It could also be a sign that the Red Sox have no intentions to sign him, and I really think that's the case anyway. So why not ride him like a rented mule? And just,
oh, absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
It's like giving a running back in the last like year of his contract like 400 carries. Like, eh, it's the next team's problem. I don't give a shit.
He ain't coming back, yeah. Yeah. Another weird
If he does come back, he's going to get paid, and that's not a high and low method, right? We know that. So I just don't see a way that he comes back in which he's this dominant this year. If he falls off a cliff in June, then maybe we bring him back on a cheap deal, or he gets hurt, who knows. But if he pitches the way he's pitching now, he's going to be a Dodger or a Yankee or, you know, another team that has a GM willing to spend money. So I think that's exactly what it is, Terry. Hit the nail on the head.
Another observation I made, and I meant to bring this up in the Richards part of it. Was it a little weird he came out in the seventh?
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, I was pissed he came out in the seventh. You know, it turned out to be great because they were able to not use a pinch hitter, and they got him out of there. They would have really burned a couple of bats, which, you know, they had a very short bench this series, so that helped out. But anytime a guy takes his foot off the gas and eases up and is joking around with teammates, it's just a recipe for disaster to send that guy back in. And I was shocked he didn't give up a run. And honestly, if he let up like three hits, I wouldn't even have blamed him. I would have blamed Cora for that one.
It really had the feel of a greedy little not going to get Pedro. It had that kind of feel. You're like, what are you doing? He knows he's done. The team knows he's done. The fans know he's done. What are you doing sending him back out there? But it turns out Cora knew what he was doing, and or Garrett Richards just had a little bit more in the tank than we thought. I understand the move from a tactical standpoint when you only have a short bench, you know, three guys on the bench, and you don't want to put your backup catcher in the game as a pinch hitter, because what happens if you actually need a catcher if you've already pulled your backup? And then your emergency catcher is Arroyo, who's got a broken hand. So you really got to be careful with how you use Plawecki in that situation. So you really got to get to that next at-bat or waste it. And in a tight game, I don't mind it. I would have liked it better if he had somebody ready to go in the bullpen behind him, which I felt like he was late getting somebody up. But I didn't mind riding Garrett Richards in that situation, as long as you had a quick hook. And he didn't need the quick hook in the end, but I can't blame Alex Cora for the hypothetical. But again, the ideal scenario would have been make sure that he goes out on top. Because if he gave you six good innings, you put him back out there in the seventh, and he got totally destroyed, it would have been kind of sad. We wouldn't be having this Garrett Richards stud moment.
Yeah, he built up so much like momentum. It would just suck to see that just all go out the window at that moment.
Well, the reason why I bring this up, and a similar situation happened with Rodriguez, and I was just trying to look up who the hitter was. He finished the sixth inning, went in the dugout, was getting hugs, high fives. His day looked like it was over. And then Cora sends him back out, and the first batter he faces hits a solo. I want to say it was Seager. I couldn't find it a second ago. And then we see the same thing with Richard. So what I'm wondering here is, and I'm speculating. Let me say this before I throw it out there. I'm speculating, and I can't prove anything. Just pure speculation on my part. But when those guys get sent back out, when it seems by all appearances they're not coming back out, whose decision is that? Is Alex Cora changing his mind at the last second in both instances? Is a call coming into the dugout phone from an office upstairs or somebody running down the tunnel saying, hey, do this, do that? I don't know.
No, I think
no, that's Cora. That's 1,000% on Cora. And he even got back, kind of mentioned something the other day where he was like, he wanted to get back into more of the, you know, the managing aspect of the game as opposed to relying on data. And then we saw these moves that he's been doing. And I do think he's also in the back of his head thinking, I'm riding these guys in the pen really hard. And he only has the trust of a few different guys. He's really picking and choosing his spots for Hero right now. He's trying to, you know, get this guy acclimated to big league hitters. Obviously, he's never faced them before. Darwin, it's like, well, all right, we're still doing a little bit of a tightrope act with him. And then, you know, Bryce and Taylor, he's got zero trust in. And then you got your other two studs that you can't just throw out every day. I think he's really trying to pick and choose and trying to squeeze every last drop of blood out of these guys before he has to actually give them the hook.
I very much agree with you, Andrew. I think this is Cora. If it was the other way around, Perry, and it, you know, these guys were being pulled when it looked like they had more bullets in the tank, I'd say that was a Chaim Bloom call or somebody upstairs making the call. But him sending these guys back out there, probably Andrew's right. It has a twofold. One, he's riding the bullpen extremely hard. Our starters have the lowest average inning pitch in the big league going into the Mets series. I assume it's higher now because Garrett Richards went seventh. I assume we're not last anymore. But we had the highest bullpen usage. And it's not like we have the Yankees bullpen from 2017. You know, we're not shortening games by three innings every night. So I think it's probably Cora trying to milk these guys. And I think it's also him trying to push the compete factor on these guys. You know, a lot of these guys last year mailed it in. And I don't necessarily mean these players, but guys on the Red Sox, they just kind of mailed it in. They didn't show up for close games. They didn't look like they hated to lose the way this club looks like they hate to lose. And I think that's because they're taking on the identity that Cora is. And Cora has something to prove now. So he's like, no, you're not done. Go back out there and give it your all until I say you're done. And to me, that's a big part of some of his managing decisions so far.
Yeah, it looked weird. It kind of, you know, there were kind of some red flags going up in my head. Erod had a 3-run lead when he came out, gives up a solo, no big deal. Garrett Richards comes out with a 1-run lead and would have been a big deal had it happened in that situation. So just something, you know, we'll keep an eye on. But Bloom has to be more analytical than Dave Dombrowski, one would think. So, yeah. Let's see. Honorable mentions. Devers. I didn't add these all up like I was supposed to. Devers 4-for-7. Couple of doubles at least in there. Good series from him.
And bullpen. That's all you have to say there.
Yeah.
Don't mention any guys. Bullpen. If you were in the bullpen, you had a great series.
Yeah, literally not one bad outing, and there couldn't have been because we only gave up one run the whole series, like I said earlier. So, all right, getting into duds, this was probably one of the more challenging weeks. I already roasted my dud inadvertently, but whatever. Job, who's your dud?
This is probably the only time. In fact, I'm going to make a bold claim here. This is the only time this is going to happen this season. JD Martinez. He struck out 3 times today. He did not have a good game yesterday. I understand he was in the field, not DHing. which is where he's best. He didn't get to look at, you know, his film in between at bats all day because he's in the field. On top of that, there's no shame striking out to DeGrom. Guy's the best pitcher we've seen since prime Pedro. But he didn't do anything to drive in runs. There was a couple of spots where I thought, okay, finally we're going to get the spark plug. You know, JD's leading off. Or, oh, there we go. There's a guy on base. JD's coming up with two outs. We can finally maybe do some damage here. And it just never materialized. So JD's my stud. It's the only time all season I'm going to use that, I promise.
Well, this is he was 0-for in the Minnesota series as well, so not the first time he's done it. But go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, I got nothing wrong with it again. I mean, this was like picking nits at the ultimate degree of hardness. He had an outfield assist, which was good the other day. That was nice to see. Because I was like, oh shit, is he gonna get? Oh wow, he got him. Because he actually went pretty far to his right to get that guy. Whatever, you know, I'm sure he'll go back and watch the film and come back a better player.
Andrew, you're dud.
I already kind of brought it, or talked about him a little bit, but mine was Kike. I never wanted him to be the leadoff guy. I wanted Verdugo to be the leadoff guy. I wanted it to be Verdugo and Devers. He had such a strong spring, and Cora is a player-first manager. He let him roll with that responsibility to gain, you know, the player's trust and really try to boost that guy up. But I think it's time to drop him in the lineup. I'm not too sure where you drop him in the lineup until we get some other guys starting to mash a little bit. Maybe the recipe's coming up here in the next few games. But, yeah, Kike Hernandez, mess series.
We touched on it, Joe, but if you have anything else, go ahead.
My main issue so far with Kike isn't his batting average. I mean, he's hitting 240, which isn't great. It's not driving in runs, not power. It's that the OBP is only 282. I mean, he's not drawing walks. Harry, you kind of mentioned it. He's always behind in the count, but he's also just not seeing a lot of pitches. I mean, I have no problem with your leadoff guy not hitting 300 as long as your leadoff guy is going to see six pitches in at-bat, give you a tough at-bat. It seems often to me like he goes down 0-2, and then he just kind of gives up on the at-bat. He might foul one off, and then he just grounds out. Four pitches, maybe five pitches at the most. I want to see him, you know, go deeper into counts on pitchers if he's not going to get on. And I'd like to see him work more walks. I mean, 282 as an on-base percentage is, frankly, it's pretty pathetic from a leadoff hitter. I haven't looked at it, but I'd be surprised if that's not bottom five in Major League Baseball.
It would have to be for a leadoff hitter. Yeah, I'm not going to criticize the signing. I love the versatility, but I love him more in the seven hole. And
well, I actually predicted him to be the number one hitter. I put out my lineup like weeks before we did it. And I said PK is going to lead off, then Verdugo. I pretty much nailed the top five. I'm regretting that now, right? I mean, at this point, I would almost put Bogarts in the one hole. If you want to keep Verdugo in the two spot, which I don't necessarily love, then it's got to be somebody who's going to make contact. And Xander Bogaerts is the guy who'll do whatever it takes to get on base. That's the kind of player I want at leading off. Not to say that I want Xander leading off, but PK is just the opposite of that. He's like, let me see one pitch and try to drive something. I like that mentality if you're, you know, further down in the order. But at the top of the order, I want to see pitchers. I want Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers and Alex Verdugo and JD Martinez to have seen five, six pitches before they even get up. And I think that would benefit us enormously, especially, you know, if we can get these guys to see pitchers who've thrown 90 pitches, you know, in the top of the sixth instead of guys who've thrown 77 pitches, it makes a big difference. You know, at the end of the day, how much they have left in the tank when they go to face JD Martinez for the third time, it makes a big difference. Yeah, PK's seen 15 pitches or five.
Is it my turn? Yes, it is my turn. My dud for the series, Franchy Cordero. He only come in for a couple of pinch hit appearances, struck out in both of them. Like I said earlier, he's a bad baseball player. I think he needs another full year in the minors. I don't really see a long-term future for him in Boston unless he really turns it on. You look at a guy like Michael Chavis, there is no pathway for him to come back, really, barring injuries, because at some point next year, you're going to have Tristan Casas up, and Dahlbeck's going to be on one corner. Duran's going to be in the outfield. There's no pathway for a guy like Chavis anymore. And I think Cordero is going to be on the outside looking in if he doesn't get it together. And I don't like anything about him. I like his personality. I like him as a person. I can't stand him as a player, offensively or defensively.
I'm tired of hearing about how he could play tight end for the Patriots. That's pretty much where I'm at. I don't care how good an athlete he is. If he can't see the ball, hit the ball. We talked about it already, so I don't want to beat it to death. But I don't think he's necessarily ready. He needs consistent at-bats.
Yeah, I mean, he's scuffling, and asking for him to come off the bench cold is a little much. And I think Cora would probably admit it, too. I don't even know if he has or not, but I'm sure if he was asked about, you know, what's going on, he'd be like, listen, we're not exactly putting him in the best place to succeed right now. Because he did have a very abbreviated spring training, too. He had COVID. I think he had some visa issues, too, or just hard time clearing the protocol. So he needs reps. I'm not ready to give up on him yet. Luckily, Benintendi's not doing much better than him. So it's a wash right now what you're getting out of there.
And well, even then, you know, it's not necessarily that Benintendi's struggling, because we got some prospects back too.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that real return, we won't know that return for 2 years. But the way that I look at it is, we need Franchy Cordero to hit 260. And if he can't hit 260, then we need somebody else, you know, ready to play defense. Because if you can't hit 260, you need to play stellar defense, and Franchy's done that. Renfroe at least playing.
Don't look now, guys, but in his last 7 games, Andrew Benintendi's hitting .304. And he's hit a home run, first one since 2019. And I don't know. I think he might salvage his career there. That being said, I would have traded him anyway, because if he falls off the cliff and it's June, you're getting almost nothing for him. So not criticizing the trade, but we just can't use the, oh, he's hitting better than Benintendi, because that's...
I don't compare the two at all. I really don't. I think Benintendi's career here was done either way.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
So I don't look at the two and say, oh, he's doing better than Benintendi, because Benintendi wouldn't hit 304 here. He just wouldn't.
No.
The pressure would have already got to him. He wasn't that guy anymore.
Can I make one observation I kind of want to get your feedback on really quick, sure, based on the series? Is Peter Alonso Bobby Dahlbeck?
I think he's more like Michael Chavis.
No, but for real, like, these are first basemen that it's like, I mean, they're going to run into a fastball here and there and hit it out of the park, but I don't know. I think Alonso, I don't think he's that good of a player. I think he had an anomaly of a year. I think Dom Smith, who had an adventure out in left field, deserves to play first base more than Alonso does. I think they marketed him great. I think he's not that great of a ball player. I think he can hit home runs and belongs in the AL.
See, he's going to hit .250, play okay first base, and run into 30 balls a year. And to me, that's the new path of the American League ball player. You're right.
The path of the
Major League Baseball, though, is run into one or strike out. He's kind of like Bobby Dahlbeck in that, except we've seen it for a full season, and we've seen him hit 50 home runs. So we
crazy.
Don't run into one every other week.
That might be the biggest standout season that we'll like ever see, because I don't see it happening again.
Oh, he won't hit 50 ever again, but he might hit 30.
Richards just destroyed him yesterday. Absolutely made that guy look like a goddamn idiot. I think going into his 6th at bat today, he had struck out 5 consecutive times, and he looked horrible on all of them.
He can't read the curveball. He's much like Chavis can't read the high fastball. He can't read the curve.
And he's their 4-hitter. Are you kidding me?
But if your 4-hitter hits .250 and hits 35 home runs on this team, we might not take it. But on the National League side of things, you take that all day long.
He's got a great marketing team.
Well, his on base percentage is 88 points higher than his batting average. So he is drawing walks and off to a slow start this year. And last year's abbreviated season, he hit 16 home runs. So, I mean, that's 48 home runs is what he would have been on pace for. Probably more realistically 38 or 40. But so I'd want to see more of him. But, you know, are there red flags? Maybe. You know,
I
mean, so
I don't know. I feel like 250 and 40 home runs is probably enough to make you an all-star every year in the National
League. Yeah. Oh, I agree. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I just,
he's like,
we heard so much about him and he had that great rookie year, but he hit 260. Last year he hit 230. Honestly, like, that's kind of Dahlbeck's ceiling, you know, like 240 with 40 home runs.
If Dahlbeck can be that and give me 40 home runs, then I'll pencil him in as the everyday first baseman for the next 10 years, and I'll be totally stoked.
Yeah, it's Chris Davis with a K season. That, like, this is just what those guys are. I don't know. I expected more out of Peter Alonso after year one, and
I'd be surprised if he doesn't pick it up. You know, I think that lineup is really scuffling A through Z, but if Lindor gets going, some of those guys get hot. JD, for example, there gets hot. And he has some protection around him, he'll start to see a lot more fastballs. And not only will he start running into more home runs, because I think the power is going to be there no matter what, but they might tell him to start slap it double. I think right now he's aiming for home run or bust because their offense is him and Lindor's not hitting well. But if he can start to get the guys around him going a little bit and that offense heats up, I think he'll hit 280. And if that's his ceiling, 280 with 40 home runs, that's a darn good baseball player.
You know, that Mets team is playing like, you know, the quintessential Mets team. They're just not firing on all cylinders, and they're getting away with it right now because nobody else in that division is playing well. Well, Atlanta's finally, you know what, they're 500 now, so they're turning it up. Philly, I still don't know what to make of them. They're 500, 12-12, and we put the Mets one game under 500, but they're not firing on all cylinders. Their pitching is kind of, their rotation anyway, a little bit out of whack. So it's just not, it's not a great environment for some of these guys, a guy like Alonso. So Lindor has his money now, so he don't care, but
I just think Alonso's market is going to be there no matter what. Because if you can hit 240 and hit 40 home runs, somebody's going to pay you a boatload of money. That's Nelson Cruz-esque. Nelson Cruz has developed into a much better hitter, but that's what he was.
Put Alonso on the Red Sox or the Dodgers or even the Mariners. That was an electric team. Just put him on a team with good chemistry that's, you know, that wants to win and shows up every game. And I'd love to see that. But when you're on the Mets, how do you get motivated for anything?
It's just tough because they don't seem to get motivated for Jacob DeGrom.
Exactly.
Like, his starts off this every year for the last three. They've cost him, I think I saw a stat from Rob Friedman, you know, Pitching Ninja. It was like 89 wins over the course of his career so far that the offense has not put up three runs or more. That's insane. Like, that is the difference between being in the Hall of Fame and the 300 club and being just your average Joe on the street, big leader of pitches for 20 years. Right? It's 300 wins, 200 wins.
Today,
that's crazy.
Today on social media, I asked everybody to put a percentage on the Red Sox chances to win tonight. Now, I didn't think we were going to win tonight, but the people that were optimistic and said the Red Sox would win, one of the common things they said was, well, DeGrom's pitching. He ain't getting any run support, and that's why we'll win, and that's why we won, you know?
I mean, that's what I told you, Terry, when I said, you know, we can scrape one across, and we're going to get, you know, if we can scrape two or three across, we're going to win this game, because they don't show up for DeGrom. And if you're not going to show up for the most electric player in baseball, for a new owner, a fan base that's reinvigorated, who the hell are you going to show up for? This Mets team has a lot to prove this season. And if they don't prove it this season, they're just going to go back to being the Mets. Right now, they're probably the most exciting team in New York because the Yankees are slumping. They just spent a boatload of money. They got a new owner. This is the year where they can really say, hey, look, there's two teams in New York. And if they don't do it this year, they're probably not going to do it for the foreseeable future.
I think Atlanta, I mean, they're listed in first right now, even though they're tied with the Phillies. And I think they're back. I think they've righted the ship. And
well, I think so, too. They've dealt with some injuries. They finally got out of, you know, the slew of injuries to their number one guys. Cunha is finally back. He looks healthy, finally. You're still going to get your number one starter from last year back at some point in the next couple of weeks in Mike Soroka, starting to throw off a mound. In spring training. Had one spring training start. He's hanging out at the alt site, just getting stretched out. He'll be ready to go in probably 2 weeks. And he was a bona fide number one last year. On top of that, Ian Anderson's starting to fire on all cylinders. He's gone six innings multiple times. That division's scary, and the Mets are not ready to compete yet.
And they still have Max Fried and Charlie Morton as well. Morton's scuffling, but he could turn it around.
Morton is, I call Morton the best four-inning pitcher in baseball at his age. You know, it seems like every time he runs into trouble, it's the fifth inning. But for four innings, he'll give you the cleanest four innings you'll ever see.
Yeah.
So yeah, his ERA is actually shockingly high. It's just a tick. He's beating Richards by a tick right now. It's very close.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I think every single one of us picked Atlanta to win that division, and I expect nothing less. Why don't we get into the series here with Texas? It's in Texas, so the good news with that is it's a new stadium. They have a roof, no rain delays. So, Martin Perez versus Kyle Gibson. Gibson's having a good year. Just looking at it right now.
He is.
2.230 ERA, striking out some guys by the looks of it. So I guess the thing to watch here is Perez is coming off two bad starts. So this should be a team for him to right the ship. And if not, uh-oh, Job's boy.
I expect him fully to right the ship here in this matchup. I know Gibson's been good, but this lineup will show up. You know, they haven't shown up in a couple of days. They struggled in the Seattle series. And then you can't get anything off the ground, so, you know, scratch that one. But they should have been able to hit in last night's ball game if they weren't. That being game one against the Mets, for those who are listening. And then, you know, Texas is a team that we should beat. There's no one scary in this lineup. So Martin Perez should have, you know, a friendly landing spot here. You are going to be in front of a full crowd for the first time in 2.5 years. So we'll see how that, you know, how that works. The Red Sox offense might be a little bit unused to that, and it might rattle some pitchers early. I think they have the only home field advantage in the big leagues right now in Texas, even though they're not a good team. So I'm interested to see that, but we should be able to take that game, that Perez.
For me, I am going to simplify my take for this entire series in one number, and that is 5. If the Red Sox offense can put across 5 runs in a game, they're going to sweep this series. I really think that. Tomorrow's going to be the biggest challenge. You got guys like Xander and Devers that have actually had some success against Gibson, but you should be able to sweep this team. And I haven't really said that this year yet. I think this is a team for the taking. I think you just need to squeak across 5. Obviously, I'm sure they're going to labor against one of these games. But that's all you need to do. You just got to shut down Gallo, and you kind of have, coast is clear. I don't think you're going to get the Brock Holt revenge game here. I just don't see Texas being able to keep up with this offense when everything's going well.
I mean, Andrew, you pretty much hit the nail on the head for the whole series. I expect us to sweep this series, Terry, and I won't say that too often during the season that I expect to sweep, because usually I'll take 3 out of 4, 2 out of 3, and be extremely happy with it, especially on the road. But if you look ahead at this schedule, got Texas for 4, we're back to Boston for Detroit. We've got 3 in Detroit, 4 in Baltimore. Those are all winnable series. But if you look ahead of that, Oakland, Los Angeles, Toronto, Philly, Atlanta, Miami, Houston, New York. Those are all tough matchups. We got tough matchups going all the way through. I'd say the next easy matchup where I can predict the sweep is in the middle of June, and that's against Kansas City, who right now is leading the Central Division. So I just really don't see a soft landing spot for this team after these next couple of series. They need to win this. It's very early for a must-win, but if they're going to keep a lead in the division, they need to take three or four.
Yeah, mid-May, definitely, it starts to get pretty tough. Game two, well, let's come back to game two in a second, because that's the other ones, there's not much of a debate. Eduardo Rodriguez versus Jordan Lyles, I think we can agree Erod's going to cruise. That's the one hardcore.
The move to 5-0.
Yeah, that's the biggest no-brainer game in there. Richards, good matchup for him, I would say. No tougher than the Mets. Up against Mike Foltynewicz, which is my favorite name in Major League Baseball, just because it's so funky spelled, but easy to say. He's pitching, you know, 4.61 ERA, trying to get his career back on track. Texas is a good place to do that, but I don't know if he's going to do it against the Red Sox. Going back, though, to game two, I mean, Evaldi, like Perez, coming off of one bad start, so you're kind of hoping he gets it together. This Kohei Arihara guy, was the Red Sox in on him? Was he one of the Japanese guys that we were looking at, or am I mixing
it
up?
I think it was San Diego. I think he was down to San Diego and Texas, and they took him, and then that was their international signing, if I'm not mistaken.
He was
definitely somebody that we looked at for sure.
Yeah, the shortstop or the second baseman signed with the Padres.
Yeah, Kim signed with the Padres, the shortstop.
We lost out on a pitcher somewhere, and I want to say
it was the first. This was one of them. The other one that was a little more established. God, I'm blanking on his name, but he decided to go back.
Yeah, right.
Overseas
back to Japan. Yeah.
Yeah.
He got a nice deal with his home team, so he decided to stay.
Go where you're comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's I was just kind of curious there, but he gets the Evaldi matchup. So hopefully those guys
I expect.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would say the one thing that I really want to see in this series is not necessarily a get-right game for either Perez or for Evaldi. I mean, that would be nice, but what I want to see is length from the starters. I want all four of these games. I want the starters to go 5+. I'd like to say 6, but we won't get 6 out of them. But I want all four starters in this series to go 5+. I think that would be really nice.
For me, the two things I want to see, other than obviously them take 3 out of 4 at least, is I want to see the bottom third of the lineup start to get it together a little bit. And I also think this, I don't care how close of the games they are, I think it's going to be Valdez. I think it's going to be Taylor. I think it's going to be Bryce. I think it's going to be Hero. I think those are the guys we're going to see. I don't think we're going to see the A bullpen whatsoever. Darwin hasn't pitched in a bit. He might be your closer for the next three games.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the reason why they were able to use Barnes in this series and lean on the A squad in this Mets series, where they expected probably to get a split at best, is because they were planning on these next four games being the B squad. So I'd expect a lot of Taylor, a lot of Darwinson Hernandez. Austin Bryce might get a lot of usage, because I have a feeling that in a couple of weeks when Brazier's ready, we expect him in 3 weeks, I guess, he's done. So I would expect him to get a lot of usage, because we don't have to save his bullets for anything. And we need to save Barnes, Ottavino, Andrees, and Whitlock as much as we can. So I don't want to see any of those four in this series. If any of those four is in this series, then I'm ruling them out as a dud for the series, because it's not their fault that they're being used this much.
It could be a good get-right series for both Darwinson and Taylor as well. So just to kind of work on some stuff. But I guess my prediction, I'm just going to take the safe route and just say we'll win 3 out of 4. you know, 4 out of 4 is possible. But, you know, who knows? We can get caught sleeping in there, or maybe Perez just doesn't have it or something, and we'll cough one up. But we'll win the series regardless.
You know, yeah, I agree. 3 out of 4. Yeah, if we don't lose this series, then all the questions that you have, Terry, that I have, that haven't yet been answered, like the Renfro question, the Cordero question, who's your next guy, who's your bottom of the lineup bat, all those questions are going to be magnified. Because this is a team that you should beat, and it's probably the first time we've played a team that you should sweep since we lost 3 to Baltimore the first 3 of the season. Right, so to me, this is a huge moment in the public perception in Boston. We need all 4 of these. 3 will be nice, but I mean, 3 would be okay. But we need all 4 of these, and then you're going to see the Red Sox bandwagon is going to grow about 4 times. It's going to be interesting.
Put Duran in left field, and it'll grow. Get the hype train going. But all right, so for the listening audience. Jason, Charlie, and myself will be back Sunday night to discuss exactly what the hell did happen in this series. So,
Charlie will be eating glass live on air. That's a quote from his last episode of Gary Richards was not good.
Oh, I can't wait. So, we'll see you guys probably Monday morning on your commutes. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.